Blog Talk Radio.
Hi everybody, you might recognize that music as Hail to the Chief, otherwise known as the theme for the Joe Biden Minute every week here on Tickle Political Universe Radio Show. This week we actually have 30 Joe Biden Minutes. I am your host, Jason Eastley. With me is my usual co-host, George. And our special guest for the whole program today is the Veterans Coordinator for the Biden for President campaign, J.B. White. Mr. White was an Iraq veteran, and he'll be here to talk about veterans issues and the 2008 campaign. With that being said, let's not waste any time. Let's get right to it. First, I'm going to bring in George.
Hello, Jason.
Hi, George.
How are you?
Oh, good. How are you?
I'm doing very well, thanks.
You ready for the interview here?
I am ready. I'm excited, and I'm looking forward to this, and I'm just looking forward to really pressing on with this.
Okay, let's get it going. We have two phone calls on the line here, so I'm not sure which one is our guest exactly. Let me try this one first. Hello, is this Mr. White?
Hello, Jason.
Hello, this is Will?
This is Will.
Hey, Will.
Hey, Will, hold on. This is our guest. Hello, Mr. White.
Hey, how are y'all?
Hello, JB. How are you?
Hello.
Good.
Okay, well, we're a little surprised that Will called into the show this early. So, okay, who wants to go with the first question for our esteemed guest?
I think I will.
Okay, George.
JB, hi, this is George.
Hey.
How have you been?
I am doing great. I just got back from an event, Senator Biden. We had our headquarters opening here in Des Moines, and I had a lot of people showed up, and Senator Biden energized the crowd with what he was saying, so we were happy, had a meeting after that, and came back to join in on the show.
We're obviously very glad that you were able to make it. My first question would be for, as a way to kind of, introduce yourself to our listeners, I would like you to tell us a little bit about yourself regarding your position with the campaign.
Okay, I am National Veterans Coordinator, which means we have Iowa state coordinator, and have a New Hampshire coordinator, South Carolina coordinator. But I'm based here in Iowa because, as you know, this is definitely the front lines of the campaign. So I will be here for a while, at least till the caucus. But I'll probably be traveling New Hampshire and different places too. But I'm a former Marine. But I served with the National Guard unit in Iraq. I'd finished my degree at University of Mississippi, the home of William Faulkner, and so I decided to go to OCS with the National Guard. And when I joined up in October of 2002, now I'd been out of the military for a while. Our unit got deployed very early for a National Guard unit, February of 2003. So I found myself in Iraq in April of 2003 and stayed there about a year, and afterward had a good many problems when I got back and had a major surgery and ended up, it took me a year to recover from it. So anyway, had a couple of years there, pretty rough times, but I think I'm on the way back, to health. And so I have worked in veterans issues too, veterans program, Hope for New Veterans, help veterans coming home from theaters in Iraq and Afghanistan having problems with PTSD, homelessness, other issues that are affecting people over there, different jobs, you get different results as far as, your the way you handle things when you come home. So anyway, make a long story short, that's it. That's, my military background, and And I got in touch with the Biden campaign and met with them back in November of 2006, and I came out here in May. So I've been doing this since then.
By the way, if anybody wants to join the program, they can call us at 718-664-6734, or they can reach us via AIM at username CAPJ71. My question would be, what do you think President Biden would do for America's returning veterans?
Oh, well, actually, I'm very aware of that. We released a veterans plan. Health care facilities. Joe Biden has made, statements. I've heard him say it twice that, if veterans need funding and he's got, if they need $9 and he's got $10, he's going to give them $9 of it. And obviously he's very strong on veteran support, but there are a lot of issues that Joe Biden, he's been around for a while, and a lot of issues that are happening at the VA that are just systemic. It's not really something that, there's a problem here, and then it's exposed, there are a lot of things that needs to be, changed in the system. I mean, just for one example here, our plan has been endorsed by a man, John Roche, who wrote the Veteran Survival Guide. He actually was a pilot in Korea. He was an intelligence officer in Vietnam, and he worked for the VA for a while. And anyway, he's endorsed our plan. Senator Biden proposes that we're going to make the VA publish the number of disability claims that they actually deny each year. And, no one even knows that. That's not even an issue that has come up with anyone. And Senator Biden knows this. It's one of those things where the VA will publish the number of disability claims that they approve each year, but they won't publish the number that they deny. And that's, one of the issues. You ask anybody, I can almost guarantee anybody on, another campaign, what do you think about this issue? And they would just look at you like, I don't know what you're talking about. So there are so many little things. I mean, he's going to, healthcare, VA healthcare, veterans are having a lot of problems with traumatic brain injury, PTSD coming back from Iraq, really depending on what kind of job you did over there. But, I mean, it's just a whole host of things that Biden will do for veterans if he becomes president.
I'm really glad that you mentioned the systemic problems in the VA system. If you could you mention, because I've written about them, but could you mention a few of them, a few of maybe the big ones that people aren't aware of? Because let's face it, in this campaign so far, there's been a lot of talk about Iraq, but not a lot of talk about the veterans or veterans care.
I worked in this field, and there's some problems. The Dole Shalala Commission, Walter Reed Commission, came back and said there need to be reform to the adjudication system. And Senator Biden, before him, was looking at this, showing that he knows the intricacies of the system. But the adjudication system, in some ways, is not all that it should be. I mean, every once in a while you'll hear a report, and I know people personally who have, I think I read on Politico, this was about a month ago, there was a Louisiana veteran who had gotten his face blown off by a suicide bomber in Iraq, and it wasn't until he got, coverage, media coverage of his claim, that, the VA was still saying that, you're at 30% disability, which I estimate it's around $300 a month, because they said his wounds were superficial. And if you'd have seen a picture of this guy, I mean, he really took a hard hit. I mean, to put it lightly here. And, and things like that cannot happen to returning veterans. It's so important. I believe it's a national security issue right now. I really do, that the taking care of veterans. Lincoln had said things about it. Washington also said things. General Washington, George Washington said things about it, about the importance of taking care of veterans, because people are more likely to want to serve their country if the veterans that preceded them are taken care of. And Right now, adjudication, I think, is a big issue at the VA. But there are a lot of things that you can do about that. Like one, what I was just talking about, is you can have them publish the number of claims that are denied each year. Now, one VA, I think the Undersecretary of Benefits, made a statement when he was asked about this. He said, in essence, I'm not quoting him directly now, but in essence, he said that our computer systems don't have the storage capability to do this. But we know that that's not right, because if you file a disability claim at the VA and it is turned down, you have to have new evidence to reopen that claim. So hypothetically, if you went back in 5 years and said, I want to reopen this claim, you know what they would say? They would check their computer and they would tell you, well, you filed this 5 years ago and it was denied. Do you have new supporting evidence on this? So the whole notion that that their computers don't have the storage capability to keep up with the claims they deny each year, it's really ludicrous. Biden knows these issues, like the back of his hand. He's so knowledgeable, and usually people have to, they focus on certain things. And, of course, Biden, as chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, he's a foreign policy expert. But there are a lot of these other issues, like you're talking about veterans, that he, talking to him, it just amazes me how much in-depth knowledge he knows, about the system.
Okay. Hey, Will, do you have a question?
Yes, I do. First of all, Mr. White, I want to thank you for your service to our country. And my question for you is, if elected president, will Senator Biden push to have PTSD recognized as a combat wound?
Well, I would hope so. I mean, as far as PTSD, now I will have to say this. I don't want to put words in the senator's mouth or anything like that, but when you say PTSD as a combat wound, could you explain a little further on that?
Well, basically, there's been a lot of discussion where a lot of Iraqi war veterans have been testifying in front of committees in Congress because they suffer from PTSD or some sort of, I don't want to call it mental illness, from, mm-hmm. Their experiences from Iraq.
Right.
But in my opinion, as a military historian, it just seems to me that, you read about stories of how, veterans' experiences from combat unlock these certain issues that need to be dealt with. And I think that the issues of their homelessness could be dealt through if they could help out with, if their mental health could be improved.
Right. Well,
plus, as you know, the Bush administration, the current administration, they don't officially recognize PTSD or any traumatic disorder as a combat wound in the statistics.
Well,
so I think that
but there is disability compensation for PTSD, and I guess that's where I was getting confused with the question here, is that there is, PTSD is a, as far as the VA system is concerned, is something that one would be diagnosed by either a private physician or a VA physician, psychiatrist or psychologist, and be compensated for that. On your question, I would definitely have to get back to you as far as being recognized. But as far as the VA system, I know guys that I went to Iraq with that received disability compensation for PTSD and PTSD only. Yes.
Oh, okay. Thanks.
Okay. Yeah. Does that help out?
Yes.
Okay. Gotcha.
George?
Yes. I'm curious to know if the call that Rudy Giuliani has been making for people to have privatized insurance. Do you think that has something to do with Senator Biden's really kind of stepping up to Rudy in recent news reports?
Well, I know what you're talking about here. This is a little bit out of my area. I try to stay, I have reasons that I supported Biden or that I still support, Senator Biden, and I don't really, I don't really want to get into issues that I really, you know, that's not my thing on the campaign. So
if I may reframe the question and help our guest a little bit, let's reframe the question in terms of veterans care and the overall healthcare system. Because right now, as you know, there are two separate entities. Do you think veterans care, like as Bill Richardson has proposed, should be brought into the mainstream? Or should what should we do with the VA system? Do we modernize it, or do we integrate it?
Well, you know, I think the VA system can be modernized. I've been to a lot of VA hospitals around the country, and you know, it's just like anything else. There are good aspects of it, and there are bad aspects of it. And I think when you have a president who takes the time, who gets the right people together with this, and you really, I mean, you know, this Dole Shalala Commission that just finished their study. I mean, you know, this was long overdue. I mean, it just takes something to put this thing, you know, in the forefront, and then it gets out there, and people do something about it. So, and I think the VA system can be, I definitely think it can be fixed. That's my personal opinion on that.
Yeah, that's what I was really asking for. I didn't want you to speak for the campaign there.
Right.
George,
yes.
Question?
Yes. One thing that I really am, you know, like looking forward to knowing about is what do you think as a member of the campaign? What do you think that Senator Biden can do to kind of get past this glass ceiling that he seems to be under right now? Because it seems that like whenever he comes out, makes an appearance in mainstream media, he's greeted with moderate applause, like he was in his recent appearance on The Late Show with David Letterman.
Mm-hmm.
He received a moderate amount of applause, but when he finished, the applause was much bigger. So it seems like people just need to kind of realize that the things that Senator Biden has to say make a lot of sense. It's just a matter of getting people to listen to them and getting people to kind of come around to his point of view. So I'm curious to know what exactly can be done to kind of get him up, at least as a contender with the other three, with the big three.
Well, I will say this, that I've heard people talk who've been around campaigns for a long time, and I've heard this, that he has the highest conversion rate, personal conversion rate, of any candidate they've ever seen. Basically, if you see Joe Biden on TV and then you meet him in person or you listen to him speak, it's very different, and people really are drawn to him. Like today, you know, when he was speaking to this crowd at our headquarters, he was talking about, you know, the next president, you know, Americans have always stepped up to the plate. At any time in our history, has there ever been a time in our history where Americans, when they knew there was a job to do, haven't stepped up to the plate and done, you know, amazing things? And Biden basically was drawing the distinction between the current president, you know, who doesn't ask much of Americans, I don't think, and Biden was saying Americans are, you know, thirsty. They're ready. They're ready for leadership here, and they will step up to the plate. So his personal conversion rate is, it's just astounding to those who have been around this game a long time. You know, on the other side of the question, you know, we all know that the front runner hardly ever wins Democratic front runner hardly ever wins the Iowa caucus. I mean, you go back to Carter, Dukakis, you know, John Kerry was polling miserably at this time back in 2003. I was in Iraq. I was trying to keep up with it as much as I could. But I think the media likes the horse race between, you know, and I'm not going to call him a top-tier candidate as opposed to Biden, because I believe, you know, whenever you're chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, you know, the most powerful country in the world, you're a first-tier candidate. Whenever you have put it out on the line and proposed a plan for Iraq and it is accepted by many foreign policy experts around the country, you're a first-tier candidate. And whenever you step up to the plate and you vote for the supplemental funding bill that funded the MRAP, which is the Mine-Resistant Ambush-Protected Vehicles, for our troops in Iraq, you are a first-tier candidate, and I would like to get into that a little bit before I tell a little bit about our organization, which will go into your question about how do we get traction out here. Now, back in the end of May, every other Democratic candidate for president and the others who aren't in the Senate, Richardson and Edwards, the others voted against the supplemental funding bill to fund the troops, and the others said that they would have voted against it. But what a lot of people in America don't know is an amendment was attached to that bill, a very important amendment, and it was which would give our troops the MRAP, so the Mine Resistant Ambush Protected Vehicles that will possibly save up to 70% of the lives being lost by IEDs. So while the other candidates were thinking politically, Biden had been leading the charge to get these MRAPs, and I wish I would have had an MRAP when I convoyed in Iraq, and we could have saved so many lives, but the Department of Defense and the president dropped the ball on this. Biden and I'm not saying that he brought it to the. I mean, there were a lot of investigative measures that had to occur first, and then Biden brought it to the forefront, and we got MRAP funding. So anyway, you're seeing with that vote, with the bill, supplemental bill vote, I mean, it's kind of a window into what kind of commander in chief that Joe Biden would be. And when I look through that window, I like what I see, and some people that I know, it is totally Democrats. It has totally disqualified the other candidates if they would win the nomination. It's totally disqualified them, and veterans can't vote for them anymore because of that vote. So anyway, now let me go in to what I think about getting traction out here. You know, I'm new to the Iowa caucus, but we have some really good people working with us, and the Iowa caucus is about organization. To give you an example, Steve Forbes came out here and tried, the first time he ran for president, tried to do it all in the airwaves, finished miserably. Came back the second time, knew he had to have an organization here, still didn't win, but he did better than he did before, because the key to the Iowa caucus is organization. I think people, you know, like you watch Hardball or you know, the political talk shows on TV, I think a lot of these people know that. They like the horse race, though. They like to, they like it when you have three candidates, that look like they're, ahead in the polls, far ahead of everyone else, and they're, very exciting candidates. But, tell you the truth, that's how people have won the Iowa caucus, is and surprise the front runner is by their organization. It's about building relationships with people. I hear stories of people going to the Iowa caucus just because they like this, a certain candidate's field director better than they did the other candidate's field director, And I think what we're doing right now is we are building the relationships that are necessary, and that sometimes doesn't show up in a poll. It's a networking kind of exercise where, people show up at the polls. I will say this, now I'm not going to say this is for a fact, but I think we have the majority of Iraq veteran support out here in Iowa. Veterans that are coming back, we've already named our state director, who's an Iraq veteran, stayed there 16 months, he's our state director. We have a Polk County director. We just had an editorial letter sent out to all the newspapers in Iowa with the signature of 10 Iraq veterans praising Biden for the vote on the supplemental bill and his plan for Iraq. So, I think it's some kind of indicator right there that we have lots of troops, no active duty installations here, but lots of troops coming back, reserve units and things like that, and they are contacting our campaign, and I really do think that we are taking the lead on this right now. But again, it's about building relationships, and a lot of times that doesn't show up in the polls. But I mean, look at history. The only time the front runner has won it, I think, in the last since Carter was a sitting president or sitting vice president, and I can't remember the other time, but anyway, you look at the cases, Carter, Dukakis, John Kerry, things like that. So we're going to gain traction. Right? We definitely will.
So what do you think of the front-loaded primary system? As a candidate that's not necessarily on the top big three sort of getting all the media attention as somebody who's trying to kind of work their way up. Does
well,
it penalize?
You know, for someone who, for someone who doesn't raise the money initially, it seems to be pretty difficult. You know, now if you win the Iowa caucus and do better than expected in the caucus, you lose a lot of money going into New Hampshire and this year Nevada and then New Hampshire and South Carolina. I mean, after that and Florida, you raise a lot of money. But you know, it seems to me, this is just my personal take on it, that the front loaded system is kind of geared where if you have a lot of money. Someone who does gain traction and does well in Iowa or better than expected in Iowa has, less time to raise that kind of money to take them, through Super Tuesday or what is the, I think it's being billed this year, is what, Super Duper Tuesday or Mega Tuesday?
Yeah, so February 5th.
Exactly. Now. And what happens is those campaigns that have the money right now are building organizations in those states. And the campaigns that do not raise that much money are basically, we're on the front lines here in Iowa and, New Hampshire, and we have to make strong, strong showings in those states. And the other candidates with big-time money can, basically the money being raised this year, it looks like that the candidates could stay in it just about as long as they wanted to, So I don't know.
Would you see this maybe as another obstacle for the non-celebrity big fundraising candidate? It looks like another hurdle that the other candidates are going to have to jump over to break through.
Yeah, are you saying the front-loaded system, a hindrance to candidates that don't raise money?
Yeah, the front-loaded system as a whole.
Probably so. And, it's just getting to the point with me, it's kind of ridiculous now talking about, Governor Culver came out and said that they would not move the Iowa caucus to December, so good. I mean, I thought there for a minute that we were going to be holding Iowa caucus, at Halloween this year. So, everyone's trying to move up and they're doing things.
I think we all know voter fatigue sets in a regular presidential campaign, usually towards the end of the fall before the November vote.
Right.
What's going to happen here in 08? If we decide the nominee, let's say, by March, and then we're waiting the convention, and then we do a fall campaign, are people going to tune out?
I think it really depends on the election cycle. I think in 2004, no, I don't think that voters, I think you could have nominated. I don't think there was much voter fatigue. That's my personal opinion on it. I'm not saying that that's fact, but personal opinion is that the Democratic Party was, I thought was really energized in 2004. To me, that's what it looked like. And of course, didn't win the election. This year is going to be a different dynamic. I'm not in the same part of the country, so I can't gauge on the ground as opposed to where I was and when I got back from Iraq. We're not running against George W. Bush this year, this next, or 2008. That may have something to do with it could help out in voter fatigue, I think. Obviously the president gets the Democratic Party energized. I don't know if their nominee this time around would energize Democrats like George W. Bush did in 2004.
Well, if I'm not my dad, like Hillary Clinton might do for the Republicans if she should be the nominee. Look, I've time for one more question from Will and George. Will, do you have one more question?
I yield to George.
Uh-huh. my question is, I'm curious to know what the campaign group has been feeling since the Senate just unanimously approved the act for peacekeepers in Darfur. I'm interested to know what the reaction with the campaign is to that, and do you think that that's going to give the Biden campaign the extra boost that it needs?
I think it's really good. I mean, I think that we can do this, and like Senator Biden has said, when we can lead, we must. The campaign, you know, what I get is everyone, you know, not everyone's a foreign policy expert, and you know, we trust Biden's judgment. Now, I can speak as far as Iraq, and I can speak other issues like that, but, yeah, we trust his judgment, and we think that he's got the right plan, and we think that America, you know, must lead, and I would say everyone I've talked to on the campaign, you know, believes that. So, you know, we just have a candidate who has a tremendous understanding of not just Iraq and not just Darfur, but I mean Kosovo, Balkans. I mean, obviously some of the things that he did there. I think he's committed his life to to understanding the issues. He made a statement when he voted against voted for the supplemental bill, and the others voted against it. He said some things are worth losing elections over, and you know, and as a veteran, you know, coming home, I'm just amazed. You know, I'm like, yeah, that's right. That's what kind of leadership that we need here. You know, so yeah, our campaign, we trust Biden's leadership on some of the issues that we aren't that well informed on. Everyone, don't get me wrong, knows about the situation there, but we're, you know, I can't call myself an expert on the situation like he does.
Well, JD, it's time to wrap up the show. A half hour was not nearly enough time.
I know. Please, I'm sorry, I'm long-winded.
Please come back anytime. Hopefully we can schedule you on again soon, hopefully before the caucuses. Come back and talk to us anytime you feel like it. We'd love to have you.
Okay, thank you.
For George, bye, George.
Bye-bye. And thank you very much, JB, for coming.
Bye-bye. Thank you very much, Mr. White.
And let's all thank our guest, because our guest was wonderful tonight. I should have scheduled maybe 2 hours, because he has a lot to say. We'll have him back on again. We'll let him get more into things. And we'll see you next week, okay? Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.